I've organized this and the sponsors, because it doesn't happen very often to be able to present one's work in front of such an audience. Today, I'll talk about information-based, but from a different angle, perhaps. One of the usual assumptions we've been taking forward so far when producing information-based models was that the discount bond system was deterministic. Of course, many people have all asked how about stochasticity in the interest rates, and we felt we had more important things to check first and develop first before going to interest rate modeling. Now, Gio Akahori from Nitsumeikan University in Japan, Lane Houston from Imperial, and recently also Priyanka Parbu from the University of Witwatersrand, we have been concentrating more on how to produce interest rate models, stochastic interest rate models, within an information-based approach. And the biggest motivation, of course, is to find a way of producing the discount bond system, to produce the stochasticity in the discount bond system, which goes nicely together, which ties nicely together with the framework developed so far. So I'll show you today one first way, maybe there are more, but certainly this is one. So since the motivation is information-based asset pricing, I'd like to go with you through three slides, just reminding ourselves what is the goal, what do we want to do, and how then we are going to smoothly go over to stochastic interest rates. So the paper where you can read about the theory is this 2008 paper with Dorje Brodien in Houston. And what we do is we make the general assumption that fluctuations in the evolution of the prices are due to information flows in the market. So the obvious question is, how are we supposed to model this information? What information about what? The information about what? And then make it appropriate for the pricing of assets and derivatives. So because we wanted to begin with derivatives pricing, it seemed to be quite natural to begin with a probability space associated with a risk-neutral measure, Q. And in the most basic setting, we always introduce a cash flow that is modeled by some random variable once we have fixed some future date capital T. So here we have our cash flow XT. The random variable may come with some, of course, comes with some probability distribution. That is arbitrary. We do not fix that. Here denoted QX. Then the next step is how do we produce the model for the information? And that's where we incorporate or we introduce this notion of an information process. Here, well, so far in the information-based asset pricing, we look for a Markov process. And some of you may be used by now to CXI when talking of an information process, but a class of information process has been developed recently, which we call Levy random bridges, and so that justifies an L there for a generic information process. I'll say a little bit more about this later. And we use such Markov process for modeling the incomplete information available to investors at any time little t before capital T about this random variable X capital T used to model the cash flow. So then the natural assumption is that since we have a model for the incomplete information, our Markov process L, then we generate the market filtration by saying that the filtration is actually generated by the history of that process L. And the next thing is then to characterize these processes, these Markov processes. And one of the features we like to impose on the construction of these processes is that at the future fixed time capital T, the observation of the process reveals allows the investor to measure, to observe the random variable X capital T, which is supposed to model the cash flow. So this is why we have this relationship, where we assume, of course, that the final value of the information process L at capital T may be some invertible function of the random variable to add some generality. So this is perhaps the most important condition why we feel to be justified in introducing random breaches when constructing our information processes L. But precisely this feature, the breaches which come in, make the processes L time inhomogeneous. And that's why automatically we land into the class of time inhomogeneous Markov processes. Of course, this the class we are going to see, or which I'm going to mention, does not cover the whole class of time inhomogeneous Markov processes, but certainly it is a subset. So for those of you who'd like to see how Levy random breaches are constructed with, for instance, this property, there are others, but this is one, I refer here to this recent paper with Ed Hoyle and Lane Houston, where we actually give a recipe how to construct this Levy random breaches. But as I announced, in this general setup, we immediately, or quite soon, say that if we need to discount the prices we are going to propose, then the discount bond system will be deterministic, and this is just for simplifying the calculation. So this means then that if we are going to price an asset with one cash flow, with a single cash flow at capital T, given by our random variable XT, conditioned on the filtration generated by the Markov process, that in fact we just discount with this deterministic discount bond system. And because it turns out by construction, that's another thing which is presented in the paper with Ed Hoyle and Lynn Houston, by construction the L processes, the information processes, turn out to be Markov with respect to the filtration generated by themselves. So it means that as soon as we employ such Levy random breach as a model for the incomplete information available to market investors about this future cash flow X capital T, our conditional expectation simplifies just to the expression 2. And this allows us to work out the price in closed form by just using Bayes formula. And here, one more time, I'd like to emphasize that the driver, the underlying driver for this time inhomogeneous Markov process may be a general Levy process with some mild assumptions like the density exists and so on. So this may be also a nice surprise process which has jumps or which is a jump diffusion and so on and so on. So at this point, I'd like now to show how we intend to produce stochastic discount bond systems in this framework. So there are, I guess, there is probably not a unique way to introduce stochastic interest rates, but the one I prefer is by introducing a pricing kernel and by modeling the pricing kernel. The reason for it is that once you have a model for the pricing kernel, you not only have the model for the short rate, but you also have automatically the associated model for the market price of risk. So I prefer to do the work basically once and then get two results at the same time. So we denote the pricing kernel by pi t, and we all know the formula for the pricing of a discount bond with maturity capital T, which is here in 3. And I'd like also to emphasize that for the modeling of a discount bond system, we leave the risk-neutral measure and take our conditional expectations with respect to the real measure, because that's where we have to produce our models for the pricing kernel. So let's now see how we can produce the models for the pricing kernel along the line, along the lines of information-based asset pricing. So we fix a time capital U. which is strictly greater than the maturity of the bond. And at that time capsule U in the future, we associate with that time a random variable X capital U, which is different from the random variable you saw earlier, X capital T. In fact, I invite you to remember that whenever you're going to see X capital U, then what I think of it is that it may reflect the model for some random macroeconomic factor like GDP, because what the next step is going to be in the production of the models for the pricing kernel is that what we'd like is that the bond price eventually will fluctuate according to incomplete information bond investors will have, the market will have, about this macroeconomic factor X capital U. Okay. So what we imagine is that I'd like to price my bond with maturity 6 months from now, but I am convinced that the GDP level of Canada observed in 12 months from now, the incomplete information I can observe now with about this macroeconomic factor X capital U observable in 12 years months, this information has some influence or has the influence of actually moving the bond prices. So if the market receives information that the GDP of Canada will be high in 1 year's time, then I would expect that the bond prices are going to reflect this fact. If the information over time, acquired over time, hints towards a decreasing level of the GDP, then we would say that the bond prices should reflect also they should reflect this change in the macroeconomic. So this is why we introduced this factor. Yes, Matthias. Yeah. Yes, the reason, it's a technical reason, it's a mathematical reason why we need capital U to be bigger than capital T. I'll show you in the next slide why. That's a mathematical reason, but it doesn't stand in conflict with financial what you might require from a financial point of view or from an economic point of view. But we'll come back to that. Yeah. But I guess what you're referring to is a more developed model where you may have more than one random variable you want actually to consider, and that would then require a higher dimensionality of the model. But let's see how it goes if we have it very simple and we just concentrate on one macroeconomic factor that will be observable at the future time capital U. So then, as an information-based asset pricing, we assume that the investors have incomplete information about this future, about this macroeconomic factor X capital U, and then it comes handy to use to employ this information processes L, this time inhomogeneous Markov processes L, which of course have then also implicitly the property to reveal at capital U the value of GDP. So then we just follow the setup in information-based. We assume that the filtration market investors can observe is generated by the information process L associated with the random variable X capital U. And then we require that the bond prices be adapted to the filtration the market has. And this implies that the pricing kernel pi has to be a function of the value of the information process at time t. Now this is a little bit more special that we actually need for adaptiveness, because we could take the whole history, but since we have Markov processes there, it suffices to just consider the value of the information process at time little t. So this is basically our very crude model for the pricing kernel. We assume it to be a function of time and the value of the information process at time little t before maturity of the bond, and of course also before the revelation of the x factor xu. So the next thing is, how do we choose this function pi? And one condition we'd like to impose on the Prising kernel is that it is a super martingale, a positive super martingale. And by saying so, of course, what we have in mind is to end up eventually with positive interest rate models. So we plug in the model for the Prising kernel in our bond price expression. This is just straight away, and we recall that the information process is Markov with respect to its own filtration. And so as a next step now, we really have to choose, construct a model for the Prising kernel, and eventually to obtain explicit examples, we'll also have to choose a particular information process so that we can work out that expectation. So one way is presented in this work with Lane Houston, but today I'd like to show you another method which I've developed with Jiro Kahori from Ritsumeikan University during my year in Japan. So here it is. Akahori, Hishida, Teichmann, and Tsuchiya have produced a very nice paper in which they show how you can generate heat kernel models, how you can construct heat kernel models that are driven by time homogeneous Markov processes. And by doing that, the kernels they produce, they apply them to model their Prising kernel. So it seems to be quite appealing to see whether the technology produced in this paper could be adapted in such a way that the heat kernels could be driven by time inhomogeneous Markov processes, because that's what we have if we want to produce information-based interest rate models. Luckily, this is possible, and the results I am going to present in the rest of the talk are in this working paper. We're trying to finish as soon as possible. So here is the heat kernel model. So we have our time inhomogeneous Markov process LTU, and we introduce what's called a real-valued, we introduce a function P, a real-valued measurable function P, and we call P a propagator if it satisfies the condition in 6. Okay? Any function, real-valued measurable function P that satisfies 6 is a propagator. So what is an example of a propagator? Luckily for what we have in mind, the conditional expectation of a function F, measurable function F, driven by a time inhomogeneous Markov process is in fact a propagator. So then to make another step in the production of the heat kernel models we'd like to employ to obtain the Prising kernels and thus the interest rates and market price of risk, we need to introduce a weight function, that of a function of two variables which satisfies this condition here. And we'll see very soon why this is important. So once we have our propagator and the weight function W, then what we are trying to obtain is models that are called weighted heat kernels. So there are various heat kernels methods. Kahori et al. Present 4 types of heat kernels, but it seems that what suits our goal best is what's called the weighted heat kernel. And weighted means the employment of this weight function. Now, how do we construct the weighted heat kernel for a time driven by a time inhomogeneous Markov process that is given in 9? So we take the integral from 0 to capital 2u minus t and multiply under the integral the propagator and the weight function with their respective properties. So since we have found one example that suits us for the propagator, we just insert the conditional expectation. And the good thing about a weighted heat kernel is that by construction it ends up to be a super martingale. And that's precisely what we like as a feature for our Prising kernel. And this can be seen quite easily. So this would be the proof for it's proof for showing that the weighted heat kernel G is a super martingale. So what we do from 11 to 12 is just a simple change of variables. And from 11 to 12, we employ the property, the condition that the weight function has to satisfy. And precisely that property ensures that the evolution of this process here, G, the process G, is a super martingale. So that looks promising. So what we do now that we have discovered how to develop super martingales, well, we just use that for our model for the Prising kernel. So you take the function G, the process G, you plug it in the expression for the price of a discount bond, and what you get is 14. And then this, of course, is valid for any propagator, but we'd like to use our conditional expectation of a positive function f driven depending on time in the most general case, or in the very general case of time, and this information process L. All right. So to obtain now examples, hopefully in closed form, we need to do three things. We need to choose a positive function f, positive because we'd like to have positive interest rate and we'd like to have a positive Prising kernel. Then we need to choose a weight function, and of course we need to specify the information process. If we find the three things going nicely together, we may have a chance to obtain closed form expressions for the price of the bond. So that's what we look at next. So since we are familiar with the Brown-Bridge information process, it seems quite natural to begin with it as one example of Levy random bridges. So what used to be Xi now, just to remind us ourselves that the Brown-Bridge information process is one example of a Levy random bridge. We employ this one, where XU is our macroeconomic factor and the noise is given by a Brownian bridge beta. So then, of course, we just generate the filtration as in 17. And here, for those who are not so familiar with information-based pricing, I just remind you of some of the properties which are needed eventually to work out conditional expectations, where the filtration is generated by the Brown-Bridge information process. So we take our formula for the bond price, and since we made a particular choice for the model of our incomplete information, we have to find out how now we deal with the calculation of the conditional expectation. So here we have to use a little trick. That's just a trick. And the trick consists in assuming, with no loss of generality, that the Prising kernel model is given by some martingale M multiplied by what will be the weighted heat kernel G, the super martingale G. Of course, martingale times super martingale gives you a super martingale. The martingale is given in closed form. That's in 20 here, so it's a true martingale. And here we have the horizon, the interval for time t. And that's where one can see that it's not a good idea to have capital T equal to u, because for capital T equal to u, the martingale is not defined. So this is the mathematical clear reason why it should not, capital T, the maturity of the bond, should be less than capital, strictly less than capital U. So what is this, why do we introduce this martingale M, where W is defined in this way, and you can check that this is a Brownian motion, and so on. But this is a martingale which shows up quite frequently whenever you want to work out a conditional expectation, especially when you want to calculate derivatives in an information-based asset pricing. This is, so to say, you can expect this martingale to show up at some point if you want to work with the Brown-Bridge information process. So it's sufficient just to accept that WT is a Brownian motion adapted to the filtration generated by the information process L. It can be shown by Levy criterion. So we employ this martingale because the effect of the martingale M is that it produces a change of measure from the real measure P to what we call the bridge measure B. And The bridge measure B is characterized by the fact that the information process L, the Brownian bridge information process L, under the measure B has the distribution of the Brownian bridge. And this simplifies a lot the calculation of the conditional expectation showing up in the price of the bond. So that's precisely what we do. We plug in the particular choice, but with no loss of generality for our pricing kernel. We change the measure by base. And we end up with the task of working out this conditional expectation. But this is much easier because now we know what the distribution of the information process L is much simpler since it's just given by the distribution of a Brownian bridge. So Gaussian, mean zero, and the variance I showed you a couple of slides before. So here I emphasize also that if you find the function G that produces a super martingale under B, then you also automatically have produced a super martingale under P, and this is a sufficient and necessary condition, so we are fine from that point of view. Okay, so now we go back to the expression for our weighted heat kernel, which is the super martingale we want to use to calculate, to produce the model for the pricing kernel. We look at this information process as being the Brownian bridge information process, and hopefully we can do the job. So here we write down the price of the bond, but now using the bridge measure B. And let's try to find some examples. Okay, so the first one we looked at is by choosing the positive function fx being the quadratic function x squared, and the weight function u minus t minus little u. You may ask here, perhaps, why precisely this weight function w? You'll see it in the following example in particular, but this is chosen such that we can work out the integral in here. So we are going to choose a weight function. There is a big class of these guys, but we choose that, which gives us the chance to work out in closed form the integral in 26. So we calculate the conditional expectation arising in 26. That gives us the expression 27, where the process L is squared. But you see, you have this u minus t minus little u appearing, and essentially these terms come from the fact that we are employing a Brownian bridge noise, which has a specific variance. And so this suggests that perhaps it's not a bad choice to use the weight function w as stated in here. So what we do is we take 27 and plug it in the expression for the weighted heat kernel for the super martingale, and try to calculate the integral 0 to u minus t with the weight function we have just chosen. This turns out to be quite doable, not so hard, actually not hard at all. And what you end up is a super martingale g, so our implicit model for the pricing kernel given by 30. And this is positive, u minus t is positive, L squared is of course positive. So we have our positive super martingale by construction, and we take this expression here, plug it in the bond price, and here we end up with a closed form expression, explicit expression for the bond. Now, this is rather easy to simulate because we know what L is. It's essentially a Gaussian process. So here we are just reminded what it is. So if you choose some distribution for XU, you can actually simulate the dynamics of the bond up to maturity capital T. Now, we made our job a bit easier. Priyanka here was quite keen on finding good pictures, and so she chose to have just a constant value at capital U for our random variable XU. So So we're just choosing in advance the value it will take. But we can, of course, introduce randomness in here, but the picture will not change in quality a lot. So what we plot here are four different paths, and they correspond to four different values for the constant sigma, which is the information flow rate in information-based asset pricing. And that tells you, it basically commands how much genuine information at any time, little t, the market has about the random variable XU it wants to filter. So if sigma is very small, then the market is in the dark, and then you obtain paths which have more, wiggle more. If the market has very good knowledge about what's likely, what the value will be at X capital U, then you'll have the situation where the dynamics of the bond flattens down, corresponding to the fact that we're having deterministic interest rate. I mean, we're getting closer to deterministic interest. So this is quite intuitive and nice. So we can work out what is the associated interest rate, short rate model for this example. There are many ways you can do that. You can work out the instantaneous forward rate and then make the usual, you just set the forward time equal to little t, or you can derive the expression for the pricing kernel applying ETO, and then you know that the drift is the short rate, minus the drift is the short rate. Or you can derive by ETO's formula the bond price, and you get bond volatility, and then you play with it, you look at what happens as you approach maturity, and then you know that the return must be the interest rate. So I don't remember anymore what we chose here, but this is the interest rate model you get for the example for the quadratic family. And this is, again, positive. This is one example. But as I said earlier, you also obtain closed form expression for the dynamics of the market price of risk associated with the interest rate. This may look complicated. This here is no more complicated than this expression or the one before for the bond. This conditional expectation can be worked out in closed form. It's nonlinear, but you just get, actually this is one of the one of the quantities you calculate over and over when you work with information-based asset pricing. So all of this is a function of time and the information process L at time little t. So this is one example. You may ask, well, is that the only one? No. We can also look at the exponential quadratic family, or what we call exponential quadratic family. It's, so you have to choose fx. We keep the information process given by modeled with a Brownian bridge. Gamma t plus u is deterministic, some time-dependent function. And you go back and calculate the conditional expectation, which is the propagator, and you end up with this Gaussian expression, where a is given here. Then you have to choose some weight function. And the way you do it is you know that eventually you'll have to take an integral over little u. So it would be nice if by choosing gamma, a is fixed. It would be nice that if we chose a gamma such that the factor in the exponent would become independent of little u. Okay? So then the calculation of the integral which awaits us will be easier. So this is why we choose this particular deterministic function, gamma. I didn't write down here explicitly what the factors here will look like after you make the specification, but you'll see that the weight function, which goes nicely with the resulting expression, is given in here, 36, where we have an eta here to have it just a little bit more general. Where eta has to be greater than 1/2. Okay, so you do the calculation as for the quadratic family, and you get the next super martingale, which you can use for the model for the pricing kernel. But this is actually quite an interesting one for certain ways. The reason is that if you use that pricing kernel and you look at what is the resulting dynamics for the bond price, you'll see that it yields a deterministic bond price and thus also a deterministic interest rate. So maybe you're happy about this, maybe you're not, depends what you want. But there is a way around it if you wanted to have stochasticity also for this case, and the trick goes as follows. You introduce two functions, f0, f1. It is actually sufficient to have f0, but once you introduce a little bit more generality, then why not as much as we can without complicating things too much? So you introduce two functions of time, deterministic functions of time, f0t, f1t, and you multiply f1t with the original expression for the super martingale we got and add f0 to it. But because f0 and f1 are supposed to be positive, decreasing, and differentiable, that doesn't change, keeps g, the original pricing kernel, the original super martingale, it keeps it being a super martingale. That doesn't change the property we actually want. So we managed to modify slightly the original result by adding into the picture these two functions, and what you end up is a bond price which now is stochastic, even for the pricing kernel that at the beginning seemed to be hopeless if you wanted to have stochasticity in the prices. So now this is unfortunately something I looked at in the last 2 days, and I didn't have the time to show you what is the resulting interest rate. But again, you just derive and you get the associated interest rate. Excuse me? Yes. Yes. The Brownian motion W, which you expect to drive, which you expect to be the usual process which you look at the driver of the price, will be the W you saw earlier in the definition of the martingale. It's going to be that W. But that requires just patience but straightforward calculation. You can also employ an exponential linear family. Here you don't get fully closed form solutions. It means that you're going to have some normal distributions in the expression for the bond price. I think that's quite acceptable as well, but that's just a remark on the side. Okay, so I have another 3 minutes. So let's see how we can employ this models or this this framework to produce stochastic interest rates and the pricing kernels. So in the first paper on information-based asset pricing applied to credit, we had, as I said, deterministic discounting. So the obvious thing is to go and see how it would change the picture if we now employed this technology, or at the very least to see if it is compatible, if we could obtain expressions for a defaultable bond that we would be happy with and would really lie within information-based asset pricing. So to do that, we have two times again, capital T and capital U. And attach the two independent factors, XT, XU. You can interpret XT as being the random variable which governs default in the bond. So depending on what XT does, the bond may default or not. And XU, we keep it being our macroeconomic random variable, which serves for the modeling of the discount bond system. Okay, here I say something about the random variable. We can assume that it's discrete. That's what we do in the original paper in 2007. And basically, I repeat the calculations. here I prepare the ground to produce the super martingales as we saw earlier. And here I'm just copying what is necessary for the production of the defaultable bonds in information-based asset pricing. You'll have to assume that the market filtration is now generated by both information processes associated with the two X factors, XU and XT. And we now price under P, since we are going to employ the pricing kernels models. So the price of a defaultable bond is given by 43, where HT is the payoff of the bond at bond maturity. Yeah, I'm done. This is the last. Thank you. So you go back, and if you'd like to employ information processes with Brownian breaches, then you'll have to repeat the calculations we had earlier. And then you have freedom in modeling the payoff of your defaultable bond. And that's where things get interesting, because you may assume, for instance, that default is not only triggered by something which is idiosyncratic with the firm which issues the bond, but it may also depend on information associated with the macroeconomic variable. Okay, so you go back to the expectation, and hopefully for good choices, non-trivial choices for age, we managed to get some interesting dynamics for the defaultable bonds. And this is also the way you'll have, or at least we consider, if we now were to ask how to produce options, how to calculate options on either the sovereign bonds or the defaultable bonds. And we have looked at this in the paper with Priyanka, and she has also shown a poster a couple of days ago. So that then would be the continuation. So I just told you the story which you need before producing some interesting examples in the expressions Priyanka showed 2 days ago. That's it. Thank you very much.